I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Soul School Lesson 75, Finding and Becoming a True Friend. One of my favorite places to read online is Brain Pickings by Maria Popova, and she recently sent out a newsletter that included something about soul friendship, which I'm going to read and link to in the show notes. And you'll be able to find the show notes at patreon.com/sparkmymuse for this episode, or just go to sparkmymuse.com for Soul School Lesson 75 or SSL 75. And you'll find links to that. I'm also going to include a lot of extras in this episode, which I think you'll enjoy. But first, I'll let you know that one of the reasons I'm doing this episode is because I think a lot of us are longing for deeper connections than we typically find online, or we start to find online, but maybe we don't find everything we're looking for or longing for that we sometimes can find in person. Or when we find them in person, we hit a kind of wall and things don't go further or aren't as satisfying as we hope, or we run into snags and we're not sure why. I'm going to go into that a little bit today, not just what soul friendship is, but how to have a good conversation that leads to a lot deeper friendships and the kind of things that lead to so-called soul friendship. And someone who I've really enjoyed listening to is someone that Maria Popova has also greatly enjoyed. I was really excited about it and decided that it was time to bring up some of this work. She writes an article called Friendship, Poet and Philosopher John O'Donohue on the Beautiful Ancient Celtic Notion of Soul Friend. Nowhere do we find beauty, mystery, and soul sustenance of friendship come more vibrantly alive than in the 1997 masterwork Annam Cara, a book of Celtic wisdom by the late great Irish poet and philosopher John O'Donohue. He died at 52 years old in 2008, suddenly and unexpectedly in his sleep. Annacaram is Gaelic for soul friend, a beautiful concept that elegantly encapsulates what Aristotle and Emerson and C.S. Lewis articulated in many more words. He examines the essence of the origin of the term. In the Celtic tradition, there is a beautiful understanding of love and friendship. One of the fascinating ideas here is the idea of soul love. The old Gaelic term for this is Annam Cara. Annam is the Gaelic word for soul, and Cara is the word for friend. So Annam Cara in the Celtic world was the soul friend. In the very early Celtic church, a person who acted as a teacher, companion, or spiritual guide was called an Annam Cara. It originally referred to someone to whom you confessed, revealing the hidden intimacies of your life. With the Annam Cara, you would share your innermost self, your mind, and your heart. This friendship was an act of recognition and belonging. When you had an Annam Cara, your friendship cut across all convention, morality, and category. You were joined in an ancient and eternal way with your friend of the soul. The Celtic understanding did not set limits of space or time on the soul. There is no cage for the soul. The soul is a divine light that flows into you and into your other, capital O. This art of belonging awakened and fostered a deep and special companionship. Maria goes on to say, the kind of friendship one finds in an Annam Cara, O'Donohue argues, is a very special form of love, not the kind that leads to us to pit platonic against the romantic, but something much larger and more transcendent. Back to John O'Donohue. In this love, you are understood as you are, without mask or pretension. The superficial and functional lies and half-truths of social acquaintance fall away. You can be as you really are. Love allows understanding to dawn, and understanding is precious. where you are understood, you are at home. Understanding nourishes belonging. When you really feel understood, you feel free to release yourself into the trust and shelter of the other person's soul. This art of love discloses the special and sacred identity of the other person. Love is the only light that can truly read the secret signature of the other person's individuality and soul. Love alone is literate in the world of origin. It can decipher identity and destiny. Maria says, but being an Atomkara requires a purposeful presence. It asks that we show up with absolute integrity of intention. That interior intentionality, O'Donohue suggests, is what sets the true Atomkara apart from acquaintance or the casual friend, a distinction all the more important today in a culture where we throw around the word friend all too hastily, designating little more than perfunctory affiliation. But this faculty of showing up must be an active presence rather than a mere abstraction. The person who declares herself a friend but shirks when the other's soul most needs seeing is not an Atomkara. O'Donohue writes, quote, the heart learns a new art of feeling. Such friendship is neither cerebral or abstract. In the Celtic tradition, the Atomkara was not merely a metaphor or ideal. It was a soul bound that existed as a recognized and admired social construct. It altered the meaning of identity and perception. When your affection is kindled, the world of your intellect takes on a new tenderness and compassion. You look and see and understand differently. Initially, this can be disruptive and awkward, but it gradually refines your sensibility and transforms your way of being in the world. Most fundamentalism, greed, violence, and oppression can be traced back to the separation of idea and affection. The Atomkara perspective is sublime because it permits us to enter this unity of ancient belonging. O'Donohue borrows Aristotle's notion of friendship and stretches it to a more expansive understanding. Quote, a friend is a loved one who awakens your life in order to free the wild possibilities within you. The one you love, your Atomkara, your soul friend, is the truest mirror to reflect your soul. The honesty and clarity of true friendship also brings out the real contour of your spirit. John O'Donohue's book, Atomkara, is a soul-stretching read in its entirety, exploring such immutable human concerns as love, work, aging, and death through the timeless lessons of ancient Celtic wisdom. And she also includes, Maria includes in this article, a fantastic interview that John did with Krista Tippett on the show On Being. Last quote from him, if you realize how vital your whole spirit and being and character and mind and health friendship actually is, you will take time for it. But for so many of us, we have to be in trouble before we remember what's essential. It's one of the lonelinesses of humans that you hold on desperately to things that make you miserable and only realize what you have when you're almost about to lose it. So now I'm going to make some commentary on that about if you don't have an Atomkara, and few of us do, to be honest, because our lives can be quite busy and quite hectic, and you might think, oh, well, if you have a spouse, of course that's your Atomkara. But the domestic, mundane parts of life can crowd out that intentionality that happens that's needed in a soul friend. And I'd like to say my husband is my soul friend, but I have female friends for my soul friendships because my husband is my partner in life, certainly my college sweetheart and my sweetheart, but we live together and there's rough patches in raising children and we've been married for 22 years and that relationship has been surprisingly stable when you consider the turmoil of my own parents' marriage and divorce and my tumultuous upbringing. But the intentionality has to really be cultivated to be a soul friendship. It's not that it can't be in a spousal relationship. It certainly can. But I have found that my deepest soul friendships are ones where the perspective is there because I'm not living with that person. And so if you don't have an Anamkara, how could you get one? How could you find one? And how could you be one? Obviously, you can't have an Anamkara unless you can be one. You can offer that to someone as a ministry and not expect something back. But if you are to want to have that beautiful gift of a mutual Anamkara relationship, there's quite a lot that goes into it. You can't have hundreds of Anamkara friendships. Just, I don't think, enough emotional resource to be able to do that. I might be missing something, but as far as I can tell, in my own life, I wouldn't be able to have 10 deep Anamkara relationships, just a handful, perhaps, at the very most. But one thing I've noticed is I've tried to develop deeper relationships with people, and just starting out with deeper friendships and deeper conversations, I've noticed that there is an impossibility to these friendships developing from casual friendships into much deeper ones for a few really specific, glaring reasons. And my hope is that in sharing this with you, wherever you are in the world and wherever you are in your relationships, whether they be casual or if you have deep relationships, this could help. But if you have casual relationships you hope to deepen, I hope this gives you a few insights and tools perhaps to deepen those things and consider them more carefully, give you more awareness of yourself, and give you more awareness of others. One of the things I've noticed is that what goes for conversation is very different in an Anamkara relationship than in a typical conversation or in a casual friendship conversation. In a relationship that is very deep and one that is a soul friendship, you don't have the same kinds of conversations whatsoever. So in it, you might share something and it won't be of a trivial kind. Of course, you can talk about the weather or politics or religion or events or something that happened in your family or the occurrences of your day. Of course, that's totally fine. But it's in the way that you do it that is most different. So you might share something in a casual way. It doesn't have to be deep every time, but say you share something and you say, my brother and sister-in-law came to visit and it was a really nice time, but their son came and he had a seizure and I felt really afraid by that. Now, a typical casual conversation where you don't have an Anamkara relationship, the other person would say, oh, well, actually, my neighbor's son has seizures. Yeah, that's a pretty wild thing. And yeah, he has seizures too. That's trading stories. That's a conversation where you trade stories. That happens so much that people don't think that that's actually not fruitful. Trading stories is fine. Nothing wrong with that at all. It's very casual. It has nothing to do with developing a deep and vulnerable and trusting relationship that can develop into a soul friendship. If you were to back that up again and say the same thing over, Anamkara relationship would say, my brother and sister-in-law came over and their son had a seizure. It really frightened me. The Anamkara friend would say, well, tell me more about that. What were some of the things going through your mind? Then you might go on and say, you know, it made me feel really out of control. And you would just kind of go on talking about it for a little bit. The other person wouldn't try to fix it. They wouldn't try to solve it. They wouldn't try to make you feel better or anything. They would just try to be understanding and just try to listen. And they wouldn't come back with a story of how something happened to them similarly. They would just sort of rest in that period of time, in that pain, and listen with the heart. And then maybe at another opportunity later, it would reverse and go the other direction. And so instead of trading stories, which is the route that a lot of people take, I'll trade a story for your story, or I'll tell you of a similar time. They don't dig into the things behind the stories, the feelings and the thoughts behind the stories, and go a step further into being vulnerable. The other problem that sometimes happens is people overshare their feelings. The overdisclosure of feelings will sometimes show that they are unaware of how often they're sharing their feelings too much. And if there's a mismatch in the sharing of feelings, that shows an unawareness and a pattern of unequal vulnerability. And so you should be sharing your feelings with your Anamkara at about a similar rate. You know, so if you consider sharing yourself as vulnerability, the one person shouldn't be in their underwear while the other person is in a snowsuit and boots. You know, there should be about an equal distribution there. If that person isn't aware of how much they're oversharing, it's not a really good setup for a close and mutually helpful soul friendship. Now, it can be a kind of ministry, but that gets into sometimes boundary issues, possibly, or possibly codependency issues. Sometimes a person enjoys being cared for, and they enjoy being sort of the vulnerable sick one, and the other person can feel like they have to be the helper. That's not really a friendship that is that mutually beneficial, and just something to keep in mind. If you're trying to become a soul friend, and you're trying to find a soul friend, the best thing that can happen ultimately is you find that two people are in the rowboat, each rowing. And if you don't have two people in the rowboat, each rowing, you're just going to end up going in a circle. This is just something I've found for myself, because I've had the very unique and blessed privilege of having quite a few soul friends in my lifetime. I think possibly because the breakdown of my family was so severe that I invested a lot of time and effort into fostering deep and powerful friendships that sustained me since the time I was about 12 years old on up. And I put a lot of thought into that. Another thing that really stymies any kind of soul friendship development is people who are just not ready. You might find that for yourself, you think, this person would make a great soul friend. You know, they're really kind. I think I can trust them. We seem really similar in many ways. We have children the same age, or we live near each other and we like the same sorts of things. And I bet we could really get along. That doesn't always work. And here's some of the reasons why. Some people are just not ready for that level of vulnerability, and that's perfectly fine. You have to be choosy, and you have to be equally matched in your levels of being able to share this type of vulnerability and this type of closeness. Not everybody is going to make a good soul friend. There are people who have addictions, who have secrets, who have lots of fears, lots of insecurities, and they are just not going to be ready. And what happens is, as you share something vulnerably with them, and they start sharing back, and you start reflecting back to them what you hear, they start feeling very threatened and upset and even angry or worried and concerned and anxious. And then that's a signal to you, they are not ready for this level of friendship. They need more superficial kinds of conversation, trading stories and small talk. There's nothing wrong with that. If a person's not ready, it's not their fault, and it's not your fault. It just means that you're going to have to look elsewhere for a soul friend. It may be one day when they look more carefully and they're ready, or maybe they've done some hard looking at their lives or they've gone to some counseling, or they've just decided, I don't want to be stuck anymore, that they might wind up coming back and saying, I felt threatened. I felt threatened when you were, you know, asking me to tell you more. I wasn't ready yet. But you know what? Now I'm ready, and let's take our friendship to a deeper level. That could happen, or may never happen, but that's okay. You're going to find people who traveled further, or they've suffered more, and they've dealt with their garbage a little bit more. Some people you'll find who've been to counseling or an AA program, after that point, they're really ready to deal with stuff, and they're really ready to go deeper. There's some people who have addiction problems or secrets, they're in a denial phase. And when someone's in a denial phase, they are really not going to go deep. They're not going to get real with you with their feelings. And they're also not going to be able to reflect anything back to you in an honest way. It's not something to be judgmental about with them, because everybody grows at their own pace at their own time. And there'll be things about you that you're not really ready to see either. And it's important to realize that we all have our blind spots. As you look around in your life for people who would make good soul friends, a lot of times you don't have to go to a peer for a soul friendship. It may be a wise person who's 20 or 30 years older than you, who's gone through life longer than you have. A lot of times it's good to have someone who's older than you, because they aren't as continually distracted by things like social media, and they aren't yanked out with notifications, and they might have more time to invest. Another thing is to try to be with people who can be fully present and who won't be distracted. They say that when you're distracted by a notification or an email or a tweet or something, that your mind is hijacked basically for 20 minutes. A good soul friend can give you their full attention. Of course, you can mess up as a soul friend, obviously. If you're willing to be a good soul friend, you're willing to give your full attention to somebody for fairly long duration, and they are willing to do the same for you, that's when you know you have the raw materials to invest in a very deep friendship that will be very fulfilling. I really recommend John O'Donohue's book, and I recommend that you go and get the extras today at sparkmymuse.com for this episode. Developing friendships and connections and finding belonging and meaning through these meaningful types of connections is some of the best time you'll use in your life. Accolades will come and go, and a lot of things in life that we work for will seem so meaningless. At the end of our lives, the things that we'll really value the most will be our friendships and our relationships. The ones with our kids or our parents or our family members, the people closest in our lives. And I don't think that any relationship that we truly invest in that becomes a mutually loving relationship and friendship will be something that we ever regret. I hope you find inspiration in this, and I'm sorry if it seemed choppy. I jumped into this in hopes that it could help some of you. And if you want to ask me more questions about soul friendship and share your experiences or throw questions my way, please just send them along to me. You could just send me an email, contact@sparkmymuse.com. Send me your questions about friendship, or you'd like to know more. I'd be happy to try to help. And I wish you all the very best in your friendships as you develop them. It's not easy. It's not always a smooth road, but it is worth the effort. And I have found some of the most enriching and sweet parts of life have been the relationships that I've cultivated. Come back next week for a fantastic episode. See you soon.